Hello, this is Tony Hall, Anthony James Hall. I recently retired as a professor of globalization studies at the University of Lethbridge in Canada, Alberta, Canada. And I'm fairly prolific in writing essays and books and such, make different commentaries in many different places, including with Tony Gosling. For a few years now, we've been exchanging information and commentaries, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Tony.
Can you explain, you know, a bit of the geography for people in Europe who aren't necessarily familiar with Canada and the United States? Because I understand it, some of the action with the convoy in Ottawa is it's actually not all that close to you in Alberta, and you are, I think, over to the west a bit. The United States, if you go across the border from where you are, you hit Montana. But I wonder, you know, are you feeling, you know, are you like hundreds and hundreds of miles away from this, or do you feel that it's part of what, you know, your Alberta life there?
Well, Ottawa is thousands of miles away from here. People in Europe sometimes have difficulty wrapping their minds around the scale of this continent and how far apart things are, especially in Canada, where there's a tiny population and a huge landmass. I'm in Alberta, Canada, the deep south of Alberta. I can see Montana out my window. I can see Chief Mountain. I can see the Rocky Mountains. I'm on the eastern slopes of the Rocky Mountains. In Alberta, actually, Alberta is really a major source of this truckers' convoy. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with the national government of Canada, the federal government level. Here in Alberta, we have almost no political representation in Parliament for Alberta ridings. There is a very active Alberta independence movement picking up speed. And the same energies that are going into that independence movement have infused energy into the truckers' convoy. The truckers' convoy traveled for days to get across, you know, the thousands of miles of the Trans-Canada Highway, spanning the Rocky Mountains, going across the prairies, going across Ontario is a huge jurisdiction. It's mostly sort of northern Precambrian shield terrain, granite rocks and forests. And then you get into southern Ontario where most of the people are. And then you get to Ottawa. Just 60 miles to the south of me is a major blockade of the U.S.-Canada border, the Alberta-Montana border, at Coutts, and that has been widely reported, including internationally. So that's just around the corner. So, I come from Toronto, Canada. I've been in Ottawa frequently. I know people there. My son lives there. And, you know, I've been following this very closely and writing about it. I feel totally engaged with this. I've been writing for 2 years now on this scamdemic, or whatever we want to call it. I call it the manufactured COVID crisis. The real crisis is governments and the media terrorizing people, creating hysteria, creating panic, creating conditions where psychological manipulation can and has been and is taking place on a grand scale. And the effort of the usual suspects to demonize the truckers and the people who support them, you know, flies in the face of something we all felt and experienced in different ways when the convoy was going across Canada. What was surprising and unprecedented, and we couldn't believe our eyes, is the extent of the turnout, people going out into the bitter cold in the middle of a Canadian winter. Taking their stance beside the highway and showering affection and appreciation on the truckers as they went by. And I think it had a big effect on the truckers themselves as they communed with fellow Canadians, standing on guard for thee, as they say in our national anthem. This tremendous sense of exhilaration at being Canadian, this sense in this instance we can be proud of Canada, at the same time realizing the antagonism, the ugly treatment we've been receiving from lying governments who mislead us, who fill the airways with disinformation, who try to scare the bejesus out of us with, you know, exaggerated, unrealistic statements about case numbers and saying the hospitals are overflowing and saying it all is the fault of these unvaccinated people. And, you know, the governments and the media and the Wall Street people and the U.S. government and the woke movement and the tremendous convergence of political power pushing this agenda. People are finally starting to see through it and see the magnitude of how we've been lied to and our minds have been deformed and contorted out of shape. And, you know, divisions have been built up between us, you know, between artificial divisions between the maskers and the unmasked, and all of these things divide us and have made it almost impossible to come together to deal with our governments in dysfunctional democracies that have basically been given over to places like the World Economic Forum and the Bilderberg Group. Our leaders like Trudeau is an obvious example of a dynastic, privileged rich kid who has for all his life been taken around to elite venues. And so these elite venues have displaced our governments, these globalists who act in the name of some vision of global ascendance of what they mean is ascendance of certain banking interests, certain financial interests. They want to take over the whole thing now and relegate us to some sort of permanent subservient position, maybe even influenced by artificial intelligence and injected nanotechnology and making us into transhumanists. You know, this all sounds far-fetched until you realize that Klaus Schwab, the founder and spokesperson of the World Economic Forum, is a big proponent of transhumanism and what he calls the fourth industrial revolution, essentially remaking human beings, merging them with machines, doing genetic modification, creating all kinds of bio-digital interfaces in our bodies, around our bodies, so we can be monitored, so we can have social credit scores, so the money can be switched off through a cashless society, you know, digital IDs, which still are being pushed, even though mandates are being abandoned in some instances. We're taking into account and looking back over 2 years, and really the idea that these truckers who, you know, are from many backgrounds, have many articulate and thoughtful people, have scientists and doctors among them to give them advice. The idea that it's some sort of outrageous principle that after gathering the support of hundreds of thousands of Canadians in the height of winter, that they should come to Ottawa and to expect to have some audience with the national government, with the Prime Minister of Canada, that there should be some formal procedure of exchange of ideas. This is, you know, this just invokes the reality that Trudeau, for 2 years, he's been happily operating, shutting down Parliament, just carrying on, you know, ordering 11 times the number of vaccines than our Canadian citizens. You know, just putting the Visa card in the machine and saying, "Hey, we'll have enough booster shots for maybe 20 years. Sure, send them over, Pfizer." This is Trudeau, you know, pushing the vaccine. No, you know, he's classic in the way of all the remedies, the ivermectins, the hydroxychloroquines, all the good natural remedies that were cheap. No, they have to be pushed aside. They have to be discredited and smeared, just like they're trying to discredit and smear the truckers right now. You know, he's been pushing this vaccine obsession. His, you know, he's had three injections. Is his neurological condition possibly undermined by all these vaccines, or they're not really vaccines, injections he's been taking? So Trudeau and the truckers Trudeau, the representative of the World Economic Forum, the friend of Bill Gates, the student of Klaus Schwab, in encounter with the salt of the earth truckers who have had this encounter with Canadians face to face and through our media. The media actually covered this to some extent. Now the world is covering this. Now Canada, you know, the movement for freedom and self-determination and decency and some kind of realistic approach, common sense approach to healthcare, the fact that Canada is becoming a source, spreading a sense of hope in different parts of the world to people who also are weary and fed up and can't believe the fact that we've been lied to this extent. We've been manipulated to this extent.
And yeah, well, look, hang on, Tony, because surely there's an element of irresponsibility here. It's winter in Canada, and half the truckers of the country that the country needs in order to keep its supermarkets and its shops full of food, you know, they're down in Ottawa having a party. So surely, you know, this is not a very responsible attitude if you're going to shut down some of the, you know, the sort of infrastructure keeping the country alive.
Well, I'm sure you're playing devil's advocate on this. So far, here in Lethbridge, I haven't noticed empty grocery shelves, but I'm stocking up, and we realize that, you know, another way this could be characterized is that the protagonists of this scandemic, the people pushing the panic and such, they wouldn't mind to see more chaos. They wouldn't mind to see starvation. They actually are trying to turn, you know, they would actually like to see people turn on their own national governments so that the national governments will be discredited and this borderless transnational approach, this globalist approach could be applied and we'll all have nothing and be happy and the great reset will take place and the bankers will be yet further empowered and the workers will be yet further eliminated through depopulation, or the survivors will be transformed into, you know, the servitude of transhumanism and the weird idea of transforming human beings into something slightly different than what we have been in the past.
Yeah, so, okay. So I know
so,
you've
so,
also,
so the sorry. Idea that this is some sort of irresponsible act. No, I mean, this is probably the most responsible act that the people involved in this convoy will have ever done. What's going to happen? To sit back and say to Trudeau, go ahead, keep doing it to us. To, you know, let the Boris Johnsons, who, you know, has been pushed back, who realize that, you know, he might very well find himself in court along with others he's been taking advice from. This realization that people are serious about holding the real criminals responsible, and those who are saying the truckers might be some on the wrong side of the law, or they might be doing something irresponsible and greedy and just having a party. I mean, that you know, you're far, you're not seeing this close up. This is, you know, there is dancing taking place. There's, you know, good music being played that people like to dance to here and there in Ottawa as this is happening. But this is a very serious, dedicated group of thoughtful people, the leadership, who are making a mark and not able to speak to our own government in Canada, but are speaking to the world, and we're having this discussion.
Yeah, well, I noticed also there's been a state of emergency declared, and I suppose this is measures aimed at trying to make this easier for the locals in Ottawa. For example, using powers to stop the truckers using their, I mean, lorry drivers, I call.
Okay, right there. I'm just going to. Really, this emergency measures. This the latest article I did in Global Research CA is about emergency measures. All these scams have been put on us: the lockdowns, the social distancing, the masking. It's all been based on that there is a state of emergency. And the state of emergency disqualifies the constitutional protections that we have. The state of emergency, like they did after 9/11, to you know, implant a false story of what happened and to terrorize us into hating Muslims and giving a green light to wars on Muslim majority countries. Terrible things are done in the name of emergency measures. And this empowerment of the police service of Ottawa, the police service of Ottawa, by the way, had their compunction to do mandatory vaccines removed. Police in Ottawa are exempt from the mandatory injections. Police in Ottawa are doing the dirty work, or essentially have been assigned to do the dirty work, that if Justin Trudeau would talk with the people, create some sort of decent process of discussion, of negotiation, then this could be put, you know, this could be handled. But by taking the hardline approach, by calling people small fringe minorities, disgusting, by calling people basically enemies of the people, he's creating a tense situation, a dynamite situation. And now he's empowering the police. The police are agreeing to step in to be the political agent, to help with the criminalization and the harassment of the truckers, and to make them look bad in the eyes of the world, and to do more division and more divisions of families, rather than doing, you know, some decent use of the Parliament of Canada, which has been non-existent for the last 2 years, as far as I can see. It's all Zoom calls. No, Trudeau has demonstrated that he is the source of the problem. He's using the system to try to criminalize his dissidents. Trudeau needs, I think, you know, he ran his election campaign using the so-called anti-vax as the opposition party. So I really take objection to just treating it as a normal thing to do, to just transform police into political agents of the Prime Minister of Canada.
Yeah, well, I think most people in Britain have got a slightly jokey idea of the Canadian police around the idea of the sort of Mountie on a horse or whatever. But yeah. I wonder just how loyal they are. If Trudeau pushes it too far, will the pips squeak and will the police be 100% loyal to the government?
Well, one of the interesting phenomena is that police everywhere tend to be empathetic to the problem that the peoples are put into. And of course, they too are citizens, and they share in some of the pain and suffering that has been imposed in the name of supposedly fighting COVID-19. So how one acts with police, the truckers have really worked hard to develop a lot of connections with police, and a lot of police are very sympathetic to the truckers, and you know, share a kind of working class sense of solidarity and togetherness. So the police in every jurisdiction are kind of up for grabs in a way. They you know, those who are disagreeing with the protagonists of the scandemic would like very much to get some police on their side, and that in fact happens here and there. However, the leadership of police and the leadership of military, they tend to be there because they can be counted on to, you know, take the side of power in every case, to defend the powerful. When you think of, you know, the criminalization of truckers, but the type of charges, you know, for violations of humanity, for crimes against humanity, for maybe genocide, for all kinds of, you know, felonies, for collusion, for racketeering, all the things that could be put on the leadership of the scandemic, the Bill Gateses, the Soroses, the Trudeaus, that kind of use of our criminal justice system needs to be considered and given coverage at the forefront. Of course, that doesn't happen because our media have become simple apologists for power.
Yeah, so also I wonder, you know, to what extent the protest movement is actually prepared for this, because the in all likelihood, Trudeau is just simply going to refuse to negotiate with them, and they haven't got a lot of cards left to play. So, for example, any kind of real moves are going to have to be involve, you know, some actually putting serious pressure on Trudeau. He doesn't have to come and talk to these people. As it's the time of year it is, eventually they're just going to have to go away and go home.
Well, it remains to be seen. You know, it's not only Ottawa where these things are happening. I mentioned Coutts, close to which I am, but at the main crossing at Detroit, which merges on the other side of the border into Windsor, at that big bridge, there is a 6-mile backup of trucks going into the into Canada from the United States. So there is a kind of blockade, it seems, happening at that border point. Truckers can drive into any city and park their vehicles, and there can be, you know, results that cause the residents of the place some discomfort, like honking of horns. They don't honk the horns at night. But people who work in Ottawa generally have kept their jobs. Canada's national capital is Ottawa. So the idea that people come to Ottawa with their grievance seeking some sort of access to the national government, and then when that national government denies them any access and then demeans them and calls them terrible names and tries to destroy their reputations as individuals, as people, calling them disgusting and such. I think the people of Ottawa, who depend for their living on the viability of the Canadian government, especially its viability in our national capital that belongs to everyone in the country, this playing the fiddle of poor us in Ottawa, we're subjected to people who are here actually trying to effect change in our national government. How ugly for them to even think about that. Don't they know their places back home, keeping their mouths shut, letting us in Ottawa just make all the decisions for them? Because they're a bunch of you know, stupid people who aren't, I mean, there's a kind of elitism, a kind of class, a kind of charged class antagonism in this whole situation. Because it's working people and middle-class Canadians who, by and large, support the truckers. It's okay. The ruling class with their media apparatchiks who, by and large, have contempt for the truckers.
I just want to get one thing clear. You know, this blockade at Detroit you're talking about, is that on this? This is one of the most important, if not the most important, arterial routes between Canada and the United States. It's the road between Toronto and Detroit.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that goes on in Windsor is they used to make a lot of cars there, and they still make cars because Detroit, of course, came into the world largely as a manufacturer of automobiles. And Canada has, an extension of that industry across from Detroit in Windsor. And there's still a lot of parts and such going across that boundary. So what I'm saying is this concept that, you know, are we just lame? Is there nothing we can do? I mean, you march in by the millions in Europe and it seems to have no effect. Well, here's another try at doing something. And yes, it might have some crinkles in it and it might have some problems with the strategy. But after all, it is, workers have a big say historically in how governments conduct themselves and how everybody conducts themselves. And the truckers have a lot of influence over who gets goods and who doesn't get goods the routes by which the goods are brought or the routes by which the goods are not brought. So as a strategy, there's a lot of play in this. And, you know, I would caution against making sort of glib comments about, well, they're not doing very well in Ottawa. They're not proving to be popular with the local people. Well, you know, the local people might have to respond to the fact that they are in the national government and there are Canadians all across the country who don't like Ottawa very much, who think it's a kind of place of, you know, privilege at the taxpayers' expense. And Ottawa has a bit of public relations possibly to think about. We go on holidays. Sometimes we go to Ottawa for our vacations. How are we going to see Ottawa now?
If we go back to the 1930s, a guy called Wilhelm Reich, who was banned by the Nazis later, he wrote a book called The Mass Psychology of Fascism. He said, just as a sort of notes, sleeve notes to his book, he applies theories on human character structure to dissecting and analysing what he realised was a menacing social situation. Fascism, he argues, does not spring exclusively either from economic factors or from the activities of political leaders. Rather, he says, it's the collective expression of average human beings whose primary biological needs have been ruthlessly crushed by an authoritarian society. Any form of organised mysticism, he puts it, and you know, I would see that looking now at this kind of COVID religion, feeds on the longings of the masses, he concludes, and we must be forced to realise its political its potential destructiveness. Now, you know, this was all banned by the Nazis, and actually it looks to me as if Reich was one of the few people that really understood the idea of a whole entire society being bamboozled by some, what he describes as this kind of mysticism.
Yeah, of course, in Reich's day, the invocation of the term fascism mostly was associated with the right, with National Socialism, for instance. The hard thing to wrap one's mind about around is that now the fascistic positions, the really fascistic positions, are coming from the likes of Trudeau and the what we call in Canada the New Democratic Party, the Social Democratic Party, the equivalent of the Labour Party. So fascism taking on the garb of left-leaning social democracy is, you know, what we're dealing with.
Yeah, hang on though, because Hitler did start, you know, he got going as a socialist party, didn't he? He convinced everyone he was a socialist at the beginning.
Well, and, you know, it does become increasingly clear that the what is being targeted generally is any form of nationalism. And yet, you know, we, the plebs, the plebeians, I'm probably not a pleb, but let me identify as if I am. You know, we depend on, you know, worker solidarity. And so this is an expression of worker solidarity being opposed by the left. You know, the left, Jagmeet Singh, who is a head of the NDP in Ottawa and is a graduate of the program at the World Economic Forum. I mean, he is leading the party that used to be the party of the working people, and now he shows contempt for the working people. In fact, he called them people who all adhere to the superiority of the white bloodline. That was his language. You know, hey, fellow workers, how are you doing, you racist white supremacists? I mean, that's basically his answer to the truckers coming into town.
Well, we have a sort of similar thing going on in Britain with Keir Starmer, who is very much an establishment figure, who has basically occupied the Labour Party, our opposition party. He's not opposing anything, and it's like Blair times 10, you know. So he is quite clearly, I mean, we had a resignation from the Labour Party's national executive here last week, Laura Pidcock, and she resigned because she said there is no actual challenging of anything really that the government are doing, only tiny little, you know, piffling challenges.
Yeah.
And that they've got no vision whatsoever.
And that was the way it was in the last Canadian national election. There's no difference between the parties. One of the major forces in all of this is the very influential role of the Israel lobby or Zionist organizations in the United States and Canada and Britain, elsewhere, because they require not only the governing parties to adhere to their Israel first policies and not make too big a deal of what is being done to the Palestinians. They also require that the opposition parties, that you can't become leader of an opposition party if you don't also take that position. So all our parliaments and the media that cover our parliaments, they're having to report on a situation there where there is very little diversity, that the power of the Israel lobby has enforced a kind of uniformity so that they can control whatever happens, whatever party gets in power. They've already got it covered. But now this failure of our system, and of course, you know, as we the people in our indigenous spots on Earth, where all we get is a vote from time to time for in a national election, in a provincial election, in a regional election, we get a vote, but the ruling class are off to Davos and off to the Bilderbergs and are conspiring with people in China for various financial plots and whatnot. And this globalism, it's just a word, but it robs our responsible governments in legislatures and parliament of the functions that once were theirs. They're now performed at Davos in the World Economic Forum. You know, half the leaders involved in this scamdemic are graduates of the Young Leaders Program in Davos. The Prime Minister of New Zealand and you can just go on, Merkel and Blair, and they all are this World Economic Forum, the influence of it is now showing how great it is and how long-term the planning has been there.
Well, it has. So, I mean, the latest one to come up on my radar is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, former oil baron.
Did he pass through the World Economic Forum classes?
He certainly has. He's been a good lad. It's all part of this. It's definitely a sort of globalization thing. But just to sort of wrap up, where do you see this going? Do you think that they've got the wherewithal to turn this tank around, this one particularly to do with mandating these vaccines for the truckers? I mean, that's obviously one objective, and it's bringing a lot of people together around it to discuss all sorts of other things. But do you think they'll succeed?
Well, it is succeeding. The mandates were dropped in Alberta last night, days before in Saskatchewan. Although I do notice that, you know, there's sort of a fancy talk where you say you're doing away with mandates, but you're going to keep the quote unquote digital ID, the record system, the system for collecting data and using it for artificial intelligence and such, that system is being preserved in spite of the abandonment of some mandates. Canada is looking more and more like a holdout. There are 11 countries in Europe and Israel are doing away with green passports and a lot of the restrictions. So it is happening. But what is needed is a real remaking of our system, because we saw in how we were led into this slaughter pit, in a sense, how easily it was done through medical tyranny, that there are big problems with our existing system, and we can't just go back to government as we've known it and the media as we've known it and say you're never going to forget what we've been through. And what can we do? I mean, if you just said, oh, well, we'll abandon the truckers and try something else. Hey, wait a minute. There's so much investment at this point of popular hope and energy and creativity and ingenuity into this movement that we've got to go with it as it's unfolding. And I think it's sort of interesting that Justin Trudeau makes himself an embodiment of the things that people all over the world have really learned to hate about the globalist approach to pushing a common worldwide response you know, created by Bill Gates and others by pushing it on the entire planet. So much, you know, that we really do need to take refuge in our nations and in our legislatures and in the fact that we are still indigenous sovereignties. We need to build up our national authorities to combat the rapaciousness of these globalists who have shown how unprincipled and unethical they are.
Yeah, so look, I'm not sure that, I mean, although, of course, it's a laudable cause that they're fighting the Canadian lorry drivers, I like to call them. We also have to understand that there's a much, much bigger battle here. I wonder if you've got any particular bits of advice for those people who are fighting these struggles as individual nations, in a way kind of fragmented from each other, because, you know, it's basic stuff, isn't it? Like the financial system, if that's not going to be changed, then almost nothing will change, because the financial oligarchy stands as an international force behind much of the, you know, for example, the pharmaceutical industry, the many of these changes that are being forced on people. So what words of advice have you got for anyone listening that's involved in these national campaigns around the world?
Well, international relations is one thing, but I think what we're dealing with, this globalist assault, is more like a supranational assault, that there is a level of power above international relations. And, you know, genuine international relations would build on the nation, would be reciprocal between different nations, but the power being exercised at the WEF doesn't really work on a level of international relations. It's above that level. It's a supranational power. And these bankers allied to no country but exploiting all, you know, they are living in a supranational world, not an international world. So we have to play, you know, all sides of the street. We have to be present at all levels. We have to take, you know, try to understand what's going on at the global supranational level, and understand what's going on in our own countries. I think nationalism, you know, I grew up next door to the United States. I can see it out of my window right now, Montana. And so there has been a consciousness of Canada that although, you know, there's some advantages living next to the superpower, we also have to deal with, you know, protection of our sovereignty and keeping Canada distinct from the United States, which has a tremendous, you know, soft power and through culture and such. So I become more and more convinced that, you know, we need to make the Parliament of Canada something other than a museum artifact or some kind of a remnant of a bygone era. We need to renew our traditional institutions based in our national identities. And of course, in Canada, you have a very international national identity. We have people from all over the world. So there's nothing xenophobic or inward looking about being a Canadian nationalist. You know, you can kind of live the dramas and sagas of people throughout the world by just looking to your own people in Canada who are from every part of the planet. There's you know, no magic bullet here. We've got to be conscious of the, you know, the ruthlessness that the globalists have shown themselves capable of, and we've got to somehow create checks against that, the same kind of thing ever happening again. And at the same time, we want to celebrate the fact that we have inherited these nations, and these nations are, for average people, the only venue available to them. They can't visit the World Economic Forum, and the people at the World Economic Forum don't represent them and don't care about them a hoot. So how are we going to create, you know, build up our national institutions, our local institutions, so that average people aren't just so marginalized that they can be, you know, imposed upon with fake pandemics whenever some power-mad Trudeau comes around?
Yeah, I like to think, I may be wrong, but I like to think that because particularly of Montreal, the French connection, that there's been a lot of interaction between the people like the French Yellow Vests and the very committed socialists in France, who, you know, see the national resource as something that should be shared out equally amongst all the people, that there's been some fertility there, you know, kind of crossing over to Canada. And, you know, the way that the Yellow Vests particularly got together a very, very strong manifesto, which was a really clear kind of plan of action. And then, of course, COVID came along and they were just banned from the streets and fined out of existence, which anyway. So, look, lovely to speak to you again, Professor Anthony Hall. Your website, or the probably the easiest place to go to find your work, is at globalresearch.ca/author/Anthony-J-Hall. Thanks very much for joining us again.
Yeah, just click on my name at Global Research CA, and all the articles I've been writing will come up, and you've just given the URL of that. Thanks very much, Tony.